Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Rees-Manelli, and I'm your host. On today's program, what's going on at the FCC? To find out, we turn to the man who writes the letter on the FCC. Well, actually, it's the blog. He's Matthew Lassar. He's the author of Lassar's Letter on the FCC and a frequent contributor to ArsTechnica.com. And we'll look a little bit about indecency and a lot at XM Sirius and their upcoming merger. You do want to stay tuned. Matthew, thanks for joining me again to catch up a bit with what's going on.
Always a pleasure to be here with the Media Geek.
And, you know, a lot of times this point in the summer, it's a little slow.
No slow. It's a hot summer, and it's not slow. I mean, there's just all kinds of – there's so many things going on that I'm almost afraid to talk about it.
Oh, wow, okay.
There's so many things going on. I mean – there's the XM Sirius merger. Let's see what else is going on. There's indecency. There's early termination fees. There's the net neutrality docket. I mean, do you want me to go on? I got another 20 here.
I don't think we can get to it all, but that's just the FCC. That's not even taking into account things that are sitting in the courts or
things that are sitting
in Congress.
The Federal Trade Commission. I mean, good grief, what's a blogger to do?
Well, you've been keeping up with it rather well lately on over there at ArsTechnica.com, and you're definitely helping me keep up on it all. I appreciate your reporting. So why don't we dive in to something I talked about some on last week's show, but I think you can probably fill in better than I was able to. In fact, I was relying a bit on your reporting, and that's the XM Sirius merger, which is in front of the FCC right now.
What an interesting problem the XM Sirius merger is. The XM Sirius proposal that XM and Sirius satellite radio should be allowed to merge has now been before the commission for almost a year and a half. It was proposed, XM and Sirius petitioned the Federal Communications Commission in mid-late February of 2007, I believe, for this. And it has become an enormous debate within the entire broadcasting telecommunications community. And all sides, but there are two sides to it. There are basically two sides to it, with everybody kind of smushing together into the middle, into one side. The two sides are, obviously, XM and Sirius should be allowed to merge, or XM and Sirius should not be allowed to merge. There seems to have developed a consensus that if they're allowed to merge, they should be allowed to merge, but only if they agree to a bunch of conditions, some of which they have already agreed to. They have agreed to a variety of these conditions. And so the question is not so much anymore whether the Federal Communications Commission will agree to the XM Sirius merger. There seems to be an expectation that they will, although you never know what's going to happen over at the FCC. It's a wild and crazy place. But it seems that they're going to do it with a bunch of conditions. That's the question. What's interesting to me about the XM Sirius merger is that the debate is really a debate about media consolidation.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a debate about the history of the last 20 years and whether the XM Sirius merger would help the perceived problem of media consolidation, particularly in broadcasting, or whether it would constitute itself more media consolidation. And everybody who's filing, petitioning, logging, screaming, cat scratching about this issue is really concerned about media consolidation, particularly media consolidation in the radio industry. So there are two sides. The first side, the pro XM Sirius side, merger side, which consists of a lot of XM Sirius fans, various people who have channels on XM Sirius and who have been kind of corralled into filing with the Federal Communications Commission, kind of camp follower type folks. A lot of identity politics type people who have come along with it. I basically said AM and FM radio has become so consolidated, especially in terms of advertising revenue, And, you know, Clear Channel is always invoked in this situation. It's become so consolidated that we desperately need XM and Sirius to survive and to thrive as an antidote to AM and FM radio. And so we really need it to be healthy. The other side says, well, wait a second. The problem is that by combining XM and Sirius, you're basically taking a huge swath of spectrum, I think about 25 megahertz of spectrum, at least as much or almost as much, or certainly comparable to the total spectrum of AFM, FM, and you're merging it into the hands of one single entity. Now, aside from the fact that that's illegal, and if the FCC is going to do it, they would have to give it a waiver. It's also a very bad precedent, I think, for anybody who's actually concerned about media democracy and is concerned about media consolidation, because it, you know, basically says that, I mean, it would be the equivalent of basically saying to Clear Channel Radio, okay, you can have all of FM and AM radio. You just basically have it all. It's basically what you're doing. You're just basically this one entity that can do that. And so they raise that as an issue. But what I'm saying here is that everybody's really concerned about media consolidation. And for everybody, the XM Sirius merger is kind of a metaphor for the problem of media consolidation in the broadcasting industry. As it's playing itself and has played itself out over the last 20 years.
And one of the opponents, though, to the merger is the National Association of Broadcasters, which basically represents the broadcast side of things. They're opposing it quite vociferously. And of course, they're the ones most responsible for the current consolidation on the dial.
Well, what's so interesting about the XM Sirius merger debate is that, you know, there's kind of this crazy quilt alliance of opponents, right? So you got the National Association of Broadcasters, and you have Prometheus Radio, right? You've got the Media Access Project, which is a wonderful organization of, you know, pro-media democracy advocates, and you got Clear Channel. They're all, for a variety of reasons, either very skeptical or outright opposed to the merger of XM and Sirius. National Association of Broadcasters is just completely out to lunch, jihad against it. On a level that it's really kind of scary to behold. They've even sort of, I think that they have, I mean, everybody's debating this. There's this kind of weird, creepy kissing cousin organization that kind of hovers around the National Association of Broadcasters somehow. It's called the Consumer Coalition for Competition in Satellite Radio.
An AstroTurf group, I think, is what we might call that.
Yes.
It looks grassroots, but it is not really.
And what it basically is it's a bunch of it's led by a former attorney for the National Association of Broadcasters and some people I've identified as registered lobbyists in Washington D.C. and a couple of former Reagan official guys who now have joined on to it. And it is basically, really, I mean, in terms of the proceeding itself, I mean, it's all but called for Mel Karmazin to be, you know, Sirius as Mel Karmazin to be thrown into Gitmo. I mean, really, these amazing filings saying that I'm making some very interesting charges. The most important charge, and it's not just this group, but it's a lot of other groups that have charged this, is that when XM and Sirius were authorized to won their spectrum in 2001, one of the things that the original order authorizing this satellite radio system stipulated, or it's sort of stipulated, is that both entities or all the entities that got some of the spectrum had to build an interoperable receiver. They had to build a receiver, that is to say, that could access all of the satellite radio broadcasters, in this case, two, XM and Sirius. And they didn't do it. XM and Sirius argue, before they didn't do it, and because they didn't do it, this sort of shadowy group argues, because they didn't do it, they basically benefited from a much cheaper spectrum price because the spectrum was obviously encumbered by this obligation, which meant that the amount that anyone would pay for it would be less. And so the result was is that they basically, by not doing it, they got a cheaper deal on the spectrum, and the National Association and this group estimates that because of that, and because they blew off the interoperable receiver requirement, they didn't do it. They basically got this ill-gotten Spectrum game of about $277 million, and they should have to pay that back to the United States Treasury. And there should also be a proceeding to determine whether or not they actually violated the law by not doing this interoperable thing. And it should be public, and maybe they should have their licenses revoked. This is all the stuff that is coming at the XM Sirius merger from the Consumer Coalition for Competition and Satellite Radio. XM and Sirius argue in response that the actual order, if you read the fine print, didn't really say that they had to build the interoperable receiver. It just said that they had to design it. And they did that. Yes. It's lawyer time here, folks. They had to just design it, and they did that, they say. We designed it, and then we decided that it wouldn't be profitable for us to build it and roll it out, which obviously might be true. And so we did everything you asked, and there's no complaints. But a lot of groups, including the Consumers Union and a lot of other groups, Congress people who have filed, attorney generals who have filed, and there have been many, National Public Radio, which has filed, a lot of groups have been saying, well, the intention of the order was that they should build an interoperable receiver and make it available to the consumers, and therefore they didn't do that, and that's a real serious issue. It raises a real serious question of whether or not, if they are allowed to merge, they will really follow up on all of these promises that they are now saying that they will make. I suppose that it would be useful to go into some of the promises.
Well, the promise that's been most interesting to me, and I've talked a bit about on the program, has been their promise to offer up some channel capacity to both non-commercial broadcasters and to minority broadcasters in particular. So sort of an echo of the requirements made on a direct broadcast satellite television, and also sort of taking into account some of the rhetoric and the investigations into minority ownership in recent years.
Well, what they've promised is, in their voluntary agreement, it's sort of a lot like the AT&T Bell South merger, in which they issued this voluntary agreement. What they've agreed to is 4% of the channel of their 4% of their channels will go to non-commercial, and 4% will go to this rather nebulously phrased requirement for groups that have not been represented before, which people are generally interpreting as sort of a minority channels, channels for various minority groups. I mean, I don't think it's going to be for the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster or something like that. I think it'll probably be for minority groups. So that's basically the idea. A lot of people are coming at that, and they're saying it's not enough. XM and Sirius should be required to give up a bunch of their spectrum, not just a bunch of their channels. And this is actually something that John Kerry, Claire McCaskill, and Benjamin Cardin of Maryland, three United States senators, wrote in a very recent filing with the FCC, saying it should not, it's got to be more than just 4% of channels and 4% of channels to minority and non-commercial. It's got to be a big chunk of spectrum, at least 20%, some people are saying, and some people are saying 50%. They got to give up 50% of their spectrum in order to make this work.
But how likely is that, do you think, that the FCC will put such a condition on them?
I don't know what goes on the 8th floor of the FCC. I mean, I sit here in my basement. Full disclosure here, folks. I sit here in my basement in San Francisco, and I do nothing but read FCC filings for most of the day. I mean, get a life, but that's what I like doing with my life. It's safe, it's cheap, and that's what I do. I don't know what they're going to decide. This is my take on the situation. Kevin Martin, the chair of the FCC, is very happy with this set of voluntary agreements, which we can go into a little bit more here. He's very happy with that. He wants to go with that. He likes it to some degree because XM and Sirius have promised to have a la carte cable systems where you can pick and choose which channels you want. And Kevin Martin just loves a la carte. He just thinks it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. And he wants that as a precedent, I think. Then there's two other Republicans, and my guess is that Robert M. McDowell, who used to be a telco lobbyist, he probably doesn't like this very much. He'd probably just be in favor of it merging outright, and he probably is very skeptical of some of these proposals. And my guess is that in addition, Deborah Taylor Tate, a Republican from Tennessee, my reading of her filings is she's pretty close to Clear Channel, which hates this proposed merger but is trying to leverage various things out of it, and that she probably also is skeptical of it, what will go with it. So you've got this three-person majority probably in the Republicans. As for the Democrats, Copps and Edelstein, my guess is that they're very nervous about the precedent that it creates and would want a lot more conditions, a lot more conditions than XM and Sirius, or especially around the spectrum thing. They probably want 20-50% lopped off of XM and Sirius, and they probably want it to be taken and given or auctioned out to some other groups. That's probably the most important thing. They'll probably, my guess is that if there's a 3-2 decision, it'll be a 3-2 decision because Copps and Edelstein don't get that.
And I know that Martin would prefer not to have a 3-2 because, you know, he would like to indicate more solidarity on the FCC and indicate that this is not a pure party line vote, which of course means that it's a little more, when it's not purely along party lines, it's more likely to survive administrations. And this administration is starting to run out. When is this going to come up for vote finally? I mean, that seems to be waiting for Godot.
Who knows? Who knows? The latest scuttle on the internet that I'm reading is that the FCC has cleared the decks and that they're really going to try and get this thing out by the end of this month. But that comes from Orbitcast, which is, you know, which is a XM Sirius satellite radio blog,
Okay. And
whose filings I have not found to be heavily burdened with evidence.
And I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit with regard to this set-aside, with regard to reserving some spectrum. In your mind, does that make it possibly – does it redeem Apostle merger at all if some channels are able to be – set aside, and you can have the equivalent of something like a free speech TV, but of radio?
Well, my position on this, which I don't talk about very much, but it happens to be my position, that this merger should not go through at all, even with any conditions.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the merger. I don't like the precedent that it creates. And the idea that there would just be one big company, even with some set-asides, I don't like it. And I would rather it didn't happen. I think that XM and Sirius, I think that the way the digital audio satellite radio system was constructed in the first place doomed it to failure and has consistently doomed it to failure. I also think that Mel Karmazin, I don't trust him. Speaking personally, I don't trust. I mean, I looked on the Securities and Exchange Commission website about salaries, and he's making $30 million a year in CEO salary. Mel Karmazin is, according to the documentation that I saw. To give you a contrast, the head of Exxon makes $12 million a year.
Turning a profit.
You know, while Sirius, has about $600 million in revenue, Exxon generates $364 billion in revenue. So I'm kind of wondering what's going on over there.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that, in fairness to Mel Karmazin and Gary Parsons and all these people who ran XM and Sirius, one of the big problems was that they weren't allowed to do local radio. XM and Sirius were not allowed to produce local channels. And the way networks are created is, in the history of radio, in the history of AM radio, in the history of FM radio, the way that successful networks have been created is first in AM radio and FM radio, you built this whole plethora of local radio stations. In FM, it was freeform radio in the late 1950s and early 1960s, all over the United States, which then allowed format to come in, as it was called, and basically reorganized those freeform channels into the very profitable format-driven systems of the 1970s and 1980s. In the case of AM radio in the 1920s, it really was the plethora of about 675 AM radio stations already existing that allowed the NBC experiment to become successful in 1928 and 1929, and then even during the Great Depression. What happened with satellite radio was that they just created this national system, and then they tried to build a grassroots base from the top down. you know, in people's cars and stuff like that. And that wasn't good. I mean, that just wasn't good enough. It didn't work. And of course, it's also true, and I think the National Association of Broadcasters is right, that, you know, they paid Howard Stern some fantastic King's Ransom amount of money. They got a whole lot of kind of local kind of people from around the country. I mean, you know, most famously Bruce Morrow, Cousin Brucey from New York City. But those local people didn't have national don't have national cachet, you know, with the exception of Bob Edwards and Howard Stern. So it's been pretty rough. It's been pretty rough going for those two channels, for XM and Sirius, and to a large extent because of the way that that satellite radio was originally constructed. And of course, it was constructed that way at the behest of the National Association of Broadcasters and Clear Channel, which heavily lobbied against XM and Sirius being able to really produce local radio. And I think that that's where a lot of the problem has come in. If I was head of the FCC, I would let XM and Sirius die, and then I would reorganize satellite radio on a local basis. I would allow there to be a lot more non-commercial community groups like that NCE, non-commercial educational window that was opened up last year to apply for stations, and let it get built from the ground up so that you had this, you built this really serious grassroots constituency across the United States, and then, of course, corporate America would have something profitable to ruin in, you know, in about 10 years or so.
Well, so one of the reasons that Sirius was so attractive for Howard Stern was the fact that...
Oh, yeah, great segue.
He's allowed to cuss. He's allowed to say all sorts of dirty stuff. And in fact, that this is a big hot topic now in the courts, with lots of briefs being filed with regard to ABC being fined for showing a woman's bare buttocks on NYPD Blue.
Yeah, and then there's fleeting expletives.
And fleeting expletives of the sort that Bono uttered during the Golden Globes now several years ago.
This is bleeping brilliant.
You've been reading in these briefs as they're being filed here. And it seems like the forces are lining up pretty well with a lot of the major broadcasters advocating, all basically saying that the FCC's rulings on indecency are ad hoc at best, idiosyncratic at best.
Well, you know, I mean, I tell you, I'll be right up front with you about my own position about this, which is that the problem with Pacifica versus FCC, which celebrated its 30th anniversary last week, is that it never demonstrated harm.
Mm-hmm.
Pacifica versus FCC, I agree with the arguments of Pacifica versus FCC, which basically famously declared that the Federal Communications Commission was correct in sanctioning Pacifica station WBAI in 1978 for broadcasting the lamentably late George Carlin's Seven Dirty Words routine. I agree with the part of Pacifica versus FCC that said that the pervasiveness of the media raises real privacy issues. I think that there's something to that. But the problem was that they never demonstrated harm. The majority, very narrow majority, 5-4, never demonstrated why it is that if you say bleep or bleep or bleep bleep or bleep 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 or bleep 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 or the other bleeps, that hurts children. How does that hurt children? We know that there are lots of parents who think it hurts children. We don't know why it hurts children. You compare this with, for example, the 1990 Children's Television Act. The 1990 Children's Television Act is based on solid science. Kids cannot differentiate between commercials and reality. If they see commercials, those commercials essentially hypnotize them into wanting to eat garbage food that will make them fat, raise their blood pressure, give them diabetes, rot their teeth. This is based in solid science. We have solid regulatory basis for this kind of solid evidentiary basis for this kind of regulation. We have none of that for Pacifica versus FCC, and we never have. So much so that when the Solicitor General of the United States recently sent an amicus curiae brief to the Supreme Court regarding this fleeting expletive case, which we can talk about in a few minutes, when he did that, he wrote at the end of it, "I don't have to show harm. I don't have to demonstrate harm in this brief because Pacifica versus FCC never did. It never required proof of harm, so why should I? I mean, it was most amazing things I've ever read in an amicus curiae brief. I don't have to prove harm because the foundational Supreme Court decision never proved harm. So this whole thing has really always been a house of cards. It is inviolable, politically inviolable. It is a bipartisan mythology that saying these things on television somehow hurts children. There is no one on either side of the aisle, and certainly no one on the FCC who will break ranks on this issue.
It's true. I mean, certainly the most activist of the commissioners with regard to two other public interest issues, Michael Copps, has been resoundingly advocating, you know, cracking down on indecency himself. He seems to be no critic of the current indecency regime whatsoever.
Yeah, they, I think, they see this as a, you know, as a basis for regulation, and there aren't a lot of foundations for regulation right now, especially in this Republican-dominated, although, Jesus, you know, look at the Democrats. But there was this Republican era that we're in right now, even if the Congress is mildly controlled by the Democrats. So I think that they see this as a basis for, for precedent. And so that's the reason why they do it. But there's nobody at the FCC or in Congress who's really willing to challenge this almost. I mean, there's a few voices, but not many. And it's all going to come up to the Supreme Court in the fall in this fleeting expletive decision. The Supreme Court could very narrowly just basically say, Second Circuit Court of Appeals is right. It's arbitrary and capricious. You have to explain it yet again. But what a lot of public interest groups are afraid of is that they will not only throw out fleeting expletives, they'll throw out the whole regulatory regimen that has been developed over the last 40 years, particularly a case called Red Lion Broadcasting versus the FCC in 19, which was decided in the late 1960s, that said that because broadcasting is scarce, because we can't all own radio stations, we have the right to be on those radio stations, or at least we have the right for those eight radio stations to be regulated in the public interest, basically on the basis of the fact that we can't all have control of a radio station, so the public has the right to input into how those radio stations are run in the public interest. What some public interest groups are afraid of, and they filed with the Supreme Court, and they've said, please don't throw out the basis of public interest regulation, because there are some really good laws, such as the Children's Television Act of 1990, which depend upon that logic and that formula in order for their very existence. So there's a lot of fear that this fleeting expletive thing will actually boomerang into something which will severely weaken the FCC's ability to regulate broadcasting under any circumstances in the public interest.
Well, you know, Matthew, that we're about out of time.
It is always a great pleasure to talk to the Media Geek, and I'm sure that the next time we talk, I hope that the next time we talk, the XM-Sirius merger will have been decided, for no other reason than I'm kind of sick of writing about it.
I'd definitely like to catch up with you another month or so, and we can see what's happened and where the progress is on many of these issues and some new issues that might come down the pike. I appreciate your continued and unabated investigation, research, and then reporting there at arstechnica.com, arstechnica.com.
Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure, and thank you for your excellent work, and I look forward to talking with you again at some point.
Of course, that was Matthew Lessar, and his website is the Lessar Letter on the FCC, LLFCC.net. And this brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'll be back in 1 week with more news and views on our media environment. In the meantime, check out Media Geek online at MediaGeek.net. Of course, the radio show is at radio.MediaGeek.net. And Media Geek is heard on great community radio stations all across North America, like WTND in Macomb, Illinois, and KWMD in Kosilov and Anchorage, Alaska. And you can hear Media Geek on your local non-commercial station, too. It's free. Just get it at the radio website, radio.MediaGeek.net, and drop me a line to let me know you're playing it, paul@MediaGeek.net. Thanks for tuning in.